Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website. Former writer at Bleacher Report, Bloody Elbow, Fight Magazine, and a bunch of other websites that no longer exist. Hope you guys are having a great week. Episode 101 is here. We're officially on to Volume 2, if you count a full volume as a 100, I guess. Sounds good to me. A lot of, been a busy week. A lot of changing stuff on the site. Got some writers shifting around, new guys covering new beats, so to speak, and all that good stuff. So, yeah, it's been a busy week. However, you know, again, it came back with a special three-guest edition for episode 100 that came to you last week. Big thanks to all the people that gave me the shout-out and really enjoyed the show. And it was all about UFC and ESPN TV talk and also some WWE TV talk. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. You can find the archives on the site, of course, if you did not listen to it. But we wanted to keep the good times going. All kinds of stuff happening. So what I did is I pulled together two guests for this show from both sides of the coin, I guess you could say. One, we lead off with Mike Jackson. Mike, a former guest on the show, and he of the upcoming fight with the one and only CM Punk, a.k.a. Phil Brooks, currently battling it out in a Chicago courtroom as you listen to this. So let's see. Yeah, so Mike and I talk for about half an hour, and I will tell you the audio is his audio is good. Mine is, sounds like I'm recording it off the computer because that's what happened. The microphone on the computer, for some reason, my podcast mic, which you're hearing now, and my beautiful tones, for some reason, the Skype setting picked up the laptop audio instead of the microphone I'm talking into, which I'm not sure how that could have happened because I set this stuff up beforehand. So who knows? A little gremlin in the system, ghost in the machine. So it's still very listenable. I just listened to a few minutes ago. You'll occasionally, I think, hear me maybe stroke my beard if you kind of hear a weird noise, something along those lines. It's fine. It's a really good interview. Mike had some interesting responses. Very confident guy as he heads into this fight against CM Punk. And then we transition to, so Mike is Mike the Truth Jackson, I believe. And then, Mike the Truth. And then we go to the journalistic truth, Mark Raimondi, our old friend from MMA Fighting. He stopped by for a little over half an hour, and we just kind of did a smorgasbord, a little buffet action with a lot of MMA stories and talking points, talk a little bit about MMA Fighting, the site after kind of what their plans are with Ariel leaving or kind of the what people have been talking about a lot. UFC Utica coming up on Friday night, which is tonight as you're listening to this, and a bunch of other stuff as well. So we talked about that, the Darren Till weight cut video we chatted about, and even a little bit of pro wrestling as well. So good addition to the show coming up. Start with Mike Jackson, then we transition to Mark Raimondi, and then I'll talk to you after those interviews. Enjoy. Well, it's been a while since we talked to our guests this week. It's been, I believe, almost 2 years, a little over 2 years. Lots happened since then, and a lot is coming up for this young guy. He has finally got the fight he's wanted. Coming up, CM Punk, UFC 225, opening up the pay-per-view. Coming up in just about a week and a half, Mike Jackson returns his show. And, Mike, the real tough questions come first. How are you?
Man, actually... I was doing well to the day, man. I went out. I'm out here in Dallas finishing up training. And Rashad Coulter, who's on the card, and another one, Charles Byrd, who he's on Dana White's Contender Series. You know, they hit me up and they said, yo, let's go to the pool. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, and I hadn't been out in the sun, so, man, I've dozed off. Like, I feel old now. But, other than that, man, I feel great. I feel like I'm in the best shape of my life. You know, for me, I know it's sort of a cliche to say this, but, you know, for me, man, this is obviously going to be the biggest fight in my career as far as name recognition goes. And I have to look at it as, you know, almost like a title fight. And I have to train like it's a title fight. And that's what I've been doing. And, man, I feel great.
So are you telling me from earlier today that you got a sunburn? Is that what happened?
No, man, that was sunburn, but... that sun is draining, and it took some energy out of me. So I was a little tired, man. I ended up dozing off after had like a little bit of a late lunch, And then I just climbed into bed and just kind of dozed off for a little bit.
The life of a professional fighter, ladies and gentlemen. Look at this. You're living the dream, man. This is great.
Actually, man, this isn't a life of, this is a life of, you know, and I know it's funny that a lot of people say, man, you know, I'm an entertainer first. And, you know, I do like the whole media personality, the, you know, the photographer, man. Like, I feel I'm one of the best combat sports photographers in the game. You know, outside of the GOAT Esterlin, you know, I'm right up there, you know. And doing these things, getting to travel. Like I said, I'm in Dallas right now. The training was the first part of the week, but toward the end of the week, I'm working a grappling tournament out here, you know, so I get to travel. This month I'm in Dallas this weekend. Obviously, the fight's next weekend. I get back. I have, I think, Lake Charles. I have Beaumont, Lake Charles, and Nashville, you know. So I get to just travel, man. And so it's really, you know, I get to be in the fight world, you know, 100%. And, you know, it's afforded me, you know, a great lifestyle at the moment.
So let's talk about kind of what's been going on the past 2 years. So you haven't been seen as far as the UFC goes since the loss to Mickey Gall. And I mean, obviously the question that everyone's been asking after the, you know, Punk lost his debut was, you know, let's see if we can get these two guys together. And, you know, you'd wanted the fight and obviously had made that well known. Phil Brooks didn't really say too much about it and kind of disappeared. And it was always in the back of everyone's mind. Everyone's like, well, it makes the most sense, you know, experience wise or just, you know, what have you. And it just seemed to make the most sense. It was like kind of just no one was really saying anything. So kind of describe, I guess, the past couple of years, just kind of waiting and how you got the call and how everything came together.
Yeah, man, you know, it was, after the golf fight, I didn't necessarily know what was going to happen, you know, so I went out and did some boxing, did some Muay Thai. I actually had an MMA fight scheduled as well prior to hearing what Phil was going to do. But, you know, that cornball, he backed out twice. So, you know, it is what it is. But as far as MMA goes, you know, it was more of a strategic planning as far as, you know, not taking fights or taking smart fights. And when I say smart fights, I don't mean like easy fights like that, but smart fights as far as the brand goes. You know, it has to be a high profile fight. It has to be possibly a televised fight. And even like the guy that I was speaking of that backed out, it was that. It would have been on TV. His name necessarily didn't carry a lot, but his sister's name's carried. I was supposed to fight Chris Cyborg's brother. And to be honest with you, that's how I've been addressing him. I don't even know his real name. I just call him Chris Cyborg's brother. But, you know, for me, it was once I got word that, you know, Phil was going to get another opportunity, that was it for me. I was like, well, this is my fight, you know. It was the fight to make in the beginning, but when you have a sort of a storyline and a business to kind of go with, that was the right path to go. It was right to get Mickey Gall. Well, it was myself and Mickey Gall. We do our thing. You know, I know I lost. I put Mickey over. He gets the big fight with Punk. And then we all knew what was going to happen with that. I told people what was going to happen. And I was just giving the what Mickey had to lose and what he had to gain. It made no sense for Mickey to sit here and stand with this guy and get caught with the right hand that he threw and tried to knock him out with. And then, you know, he loses it. He loses everything. You know, again, we all have different paths here. You know, myself, I mean, I'm fight because I love fighting. I enjoy it. You know, for Sam Punk, it's something that he wants to try to do. But for Mickey, this is his life. You know, the guy was driving a bread truck prior to fighting in the UFC. And now he doesn't have to do that anymore. He can set himself up, you know, for a great future. And he's someone who has aspirations of being a world champion. You know, so out of the three of us, he has the most to gain as well as the most to lose. So when you look at fights and stylistically, it only made sense for him to do what he did against Phil, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, and like I said, for me, as far as getting the fight with Phil, once I knew that he was going to get the second chance, it was all about me with the strategic marketing and the great promotions that I've done to get the build up and get the buzz going. And again, I'm here.
Because and he's not doing any promotion at all. I don't know if you know this. He's in court right now for a trial against a WWE doctor.
Yeah, I actually heard about that today. You know, he doesn't have to. That's the thing is, like, he doesn't have to do anything. You know, and I know a lot of people say, oh, Mike is doing all the work and, you know, Punk isn't doing. Look, none of that matters. He doesn't have to do anything. And I'm cool with that. You know, for me, I enjoy, like, this is fun for me. Again, I'm an entertainer. You know, it's just, I know a lot of people, like the fighters who like, that's their life. You know, that's all they want to focus and concentrate on. So they have a team around them. Or if they're smart, they're going to have a team. But for me, I as far as like the charisma and the mic skills and the entertainment value, this is me, you know. And so I enjoy everything that's going on right now. Mm.
So the fight you're talking about previously, was that supposed to be in the UFC or is that outside the UFC?
No, that was going to be under the LFA Legacy Fighting Alliance banner.
Got it.
You know, with them, I work with them. I'm one of their photographers as well as do some videography as well. It was a great opportunity for me when it was, again, one of his Chris Cyborg's brother, you know, yep. it had great name. Again, it was a smart fight to take, you know, as far as like name recognition and all those things. But again, he chickened out. He didn't want to get in there with your boy. And then I have an idea why. Well, actually the first time he backed out because his sister couldn't come to the fight. And I was like, yo, like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
Chris was out cornering Clarissa Shields or whatever she was doing with Clarissa Shields during her debut. And then when the fight was rescheduled, then he comes back and he's like, ah, well, I want more money now. Now, I know why he wanted more money. What happened was I took a boxing match between the two fights being scheduled, and I ended up, man, I took some poor kid's soul. And I know he probably saw the video. He was like, nah. So he priced himself out of the fight. And I'm not mad at it. It is what it is. You know, I didn't really lose any sleep over it, but I got to poke at him a little bit for that.
Yeah. So were you under contract the whole time?
Or did you have I wasn't. No, I wasn't under contract.
Okay.
They released me, you know, and I was cool with it. Again, I knew what it was, you know, I understood everything. So yep. I didn't get butthurt or anything like that about it. Like I said, it's a business.
Yep.
You know, and that's what it is.
So they reached out and they brought you back. Are you under one fight deal, multi fight deal, or what's the deal there?
I don't know. Probably multi fight deal. I messed up the first time. I didn't really read the contract.
Yeah.
I thought I was under a one fight deal and I was on a multi fight deal. But then, you know, as I started calling out Artem wanting to get that fight, then they cut me. And, you know, like I said, it is what it is. You know, I'm just here to have fun.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm doing.
So do you consider yourself like, in the UFC, like do you consider yourself like you want to stay, or is this just kind of something that one of many things that you do, like a lot of other fighters that we see?
No, you know, for me, I want to be, as far as, you know, what I'm doing right now, it's all about the brand and building that up. And, you know, I feel having that, you know, UFC fighter on sort of the docket here, you know, makes sense when I'm doing, you know, these interviews and talking to people. It only makes sense to have that attached to my name.
Yeah. So when you look at, I know you've been calling him Phil a lot, and I think you said, if I read this quote right, I think you said that you're going to, the CM Punk name is going to die in Chicago. Is that right? Is that, or the brand or something like that? Is that what I saw?
Yeah. So, because again, everyone is getting sort of attached to the moniker of CM Punk, and I understand why. That's what got him here. But this is not a scripted match, this is a real fight. And he won't have the CM Punk sort of superpowers that he had in professional wrestling. He's coming in as Phil Brooks, and you have to treat him as such. You can't let this star, because that's what he is. He's a huge star. You can't let that, you know, you can't let that get into your mind. I think that's what I think people like the fans and all that, they're getting caught up in the whole CM Punk character. Mm-hmm. And I can't let that get to me and let it bother me. He's just a man. You know, he's not the character of CM Punk. He's Phil Brooks. And like I said before, his mother named him Phil, so I'm going to call him Phil. And that's really what it is. And now I have everyone calling him Phil. That's the funny thing about it. Again, for me, this whole thing, I spoke things into existence. And this fight, I made it happen. I'm you know, when I, it was all about the branding and the marketing and sort of the little subtle little, you know, whether I'm wearing a UFC hat or flip flops or, you know, whatever. All of these things I made happen, you know, and it was just through speaking things into his existence.
So have you ever met him? You've ever come face to face with him in all these past couple of years?
Yeah, you know, I ran into him in the right after the golf fight. It was just an awkward. You know, he could have done two things. One, he could have just not said anything or done anything. Mm-hmm. It was just really awkward when he approached me, and it was just like, even if he chose to do that, he could have came up, hey man, good try, you know, good luck with the future, and could have walked off, and I would have been okay with that. But it was real awkward, like, good job, like, maybe, it was just really awkward.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yo, like, what did you even come over here for? Like, you really didn't have to say anything to me. And again, it wasn't like I was a CM Punk fan growing up and I kind of was like, oh my God, CM Punk. No, it was none of that. It was just real awkward. Now, maybe that's just him. Maybe he's an awkward cat. I don't know. But for me, I was just like, yo, you really didn't have to do this.
It is kind of weird because we'd really, like, when he first announced that this whole thing was happening, we kind of assumed that he's just going to go by his regular name. There was kind of this, like, discussion as far as, like, and you know this from like, the media side, like, what do we call him? And some people are like, you can't call him by his WWE name, but then you have other people like Kimbo Slice, who we called by his kind of, like, performer name. So it was just kind of a weird thing as far as, like, what to call him. So I think you're onto something with calling him Phil or, you know, even Philip if you're really getting under his skin or something like that.
Well, you know, it wasn't even about that. You know, if this were like a Brock Lesnar or even a Kimbo Slice situation, maybe I will call him, you know, by CM Punk's name. But it's none of that. He has literally no fight experience outside of the golf fight. He has no fight experience. So I can't associate this sort of mythical, bigger than life character with someone who's never fought. Kimbo Slice, he was boogieing in the backyard. Brock Lesnar had, now obviously that's his real name, but Brock Lesnar had a collegiate wrestling background prior to fighting in the UFC. So it's just different than the rest of the guys.
So for those people that obviously saw your performance a couple of years ago to what they're going to see a week and a half from now in Chicago, what should they expect? But what skills are you most proud that you've developed in the past couple of years?
It really wasn't skills that I've developed, to be honest with you. The golf fight, it was more, you know, I was coming off of a long, I took about 8 weeks off to let an injury heal. And literally I was training for about 4 or 5 days before I got the call, which was also like on a month's notice roughly. So I mean, you know, it was kind of like a crash course in training. But for this camp, it was more, I was able to focus on me and really just hone the skills, make sure training is going well. There were a few things that I picked up over the course, but it had nothing to do with the fight. You know, for me, I was definitely improving the footwork and angles game. You know, I'm a boxer. You know, that's what a lot of people know me for. And so I've been adding skills to just the boxing game plan. And that was something I did in my last boxing match was I learned something. Actually, it was a lot of Lomachenko footwork. And I was working on different angles and things like that. And I utilized those in that boxing match and earned a big knockout. You know, so that's going to be a new tool that I've added to the game that I didn't. Well, and again, the golf fight, it was just, I want a mulligan on that one for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, again, just situational things happen. It is what it is, you know. But this is a different guy. This is not a Mickey Gall. You know, and that's what I think people don't understand. It's like, look, if you take CM Punk's name off of this, you take even my name off of it, you have Fighter A and Fighter B. You have Fighter A, who's been training and competing for 10 years. And, you know, we have that was his amateur MMA, boxing, kickboxing, all these different disciplines, you know, and boxing and kickboxing. We're undefeated with all wins coming via knockout, right? Then you take the other guy who he's been training off and on for, I'll be nice and say 5 years, you know, but even in that 5-year period, he started with jiu-jitsu only. And then as far as his striking goes, he's very limited, like, as far as comparing our striking, like, there is literally no comparison. Like, that would be like taking someone who's a sub novice in the Golden Gloves and putting him in there with the a USA, like an Olympian.
Yeah,
that's what it's going to be like. And I don't think people realize that and I know I may come off as cocky or arrogant, but that's not me. I'm just a realist. Again, if this were someone who had a previous fight, like combat sports experience, then I would give him his props. But he has none. That's what it is. Like, he has zero combat experience outside of the Mickey Gall fight. And I have a lot of experience when it comes to outside of professional MMA. Mm. You know, a lot of these guys only know me for the Gall fight. And I get it. Those are UFC fans. Not taking anything away from them. But you have to do your research. If you're a real fight fan, you can just type my name in. And you can spend 5 minutes on Google and find out what I've contributed to the MMA world or to combat sports world. It doesn't take long to find that out. So I hear myself talk and like, damn, this dude sounds kind of cocky, but it's really not it at all. It's just stating the facts.
Yeah. Honestly, I was just about to say before I even said that you sound more confident than even when we talked like 3 years ago. And I think you can tell when somebody, and no bullshit, I think you can tell if somebody is putting on an act, but when I get a sense of you, like, you're not putting on an act. You're fully confident in skills because what you're saying, you've put in the work, you've done this, you've competed, and I think that's confidence with any pro athlete. That's a big thing, and knowing if you were just like, I don't know how I'm going to do, I mean, no one would expect that, right? Because, I mean, this is why you put in the hours, right? This is why you get in there and do that and sweat and ache and hurt and bleed and you know, all this stuff. This is so you can come to these, talk to people and say, I'm going to win because I've been trained to do this. I'm not trained to lose.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. 100%. So like I said, at the end of the day, it's Phil Brooks with one MMA fight versus Mike Jackson, who has a plethora of fights under his belt. He has the experience, you know, and that's what it is. And that's how these fans need to look at it. But, you know, it's a catch 22 for Phil. It's like he wants to compete. And with his name, his only option, if you want to maximize your money and maximize exposure, you have to fight in the UFC. And with that, they can't put someone who's at your level. Like, I'm the lowest of level in the UFC. Like, I'm not, there is no mistake about it. But even at that, my skills are far more superior than his on the feet and on the ground. And that's the other thing is, like, I know people, even in the past, like, I know people like, oh, he doesn't have ground skill. It's not that I don't have them. It's just I like punching people in the face. That's just what I like to do. And so I've spent a lot of time focusing on that because I love it so much. Again, if I were trying to become a world champion or if I were really trying to make a career out of fighting in MMA, then of course I would go that path. Look, man, I love MMA as a passion of mine. That's why I spend so much time in it. So I know what goes into training for an MMA fight. Look, it's just not for me. You know, now I can roll. I'll take jujitsu. I take wrestling. I can do these things. But for me to want to do something, and again, I'm doing this because I love this. I love it right now. I enjoy it. But for me to do something and enjoy it, I have to even enjoy the training aspect of it. And again, not that I can't do it. I don't want to do it. But again, I enjoy punching people in the face far more than, you know, grappling. And that's really what it is.
Who do you draw your inspiration from when it comes to the full package of being a fighter, when it comes to like the promotion? Obviously the in-cage stuff and in-ring stuff is different, but kind of just like the whole package. Who have you draw inspiration from? Either the guys that are fighting now, fighting in the past, all that. Who do you kind of look at and you're like, that's kind of what I'd like to be in terms of everything?
I really couldn't pick anybody, to be honest with you. I'm just me. You know, this is me a lot. You know, it's not like a show or anything like this. Is just who I am, you know. And when I go and fight, I do my own thing. You know, I've had, you know, people as far as like boxing goes, people I looked up to were Roy Jones Jr. and James Toney. You know, I love both of their styles, you know. But just as the fight itself, man, I'm just doing me. Because when I'm explaining people like boxing to people, I was like, not everyone can do everything. You have to do things that work for you. And like, I have a lot of bad habits in boxing, but I get away with a lot of it too, you know. And the reason I'm able to get away with it are just natural abilities that I have, my quickness, my length, my speed. And so I tailored my fight game to my own abilities. And so that's why they work best for me.
Saturday, April 9th, he gets his chance, finally, the fight that everyone's been waiting for, whether or not they like it or not. You have a chance to see him. He opens up the show. UFC 225, the pay-per-view. Mike Jackson takes on CM Punk, and Mike Ford lets you go. Obviously, you're a man of many interests, as you talked about as we kicked off. Give the people a chance to tell people where they can follow you on social media and also where they can see you, you know, out and around and things you're up to and the pictures you're taking and events and all that stuff. The floor is yours. Go ahead and promote.
You know, you can follow me on all my social media is at The Truth Jackson. You know, for Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and Facebook. And then and when you follow me, you follow the sports and, you know, that I cover. Like I said, I'm out here for a jiu-jitsu show. And that's some, man, some high-level grappling that you get to witness. But for me, what this does is, again, I'm here to build the brand and to elevate it to another level. And what that does is all the people that I get to cover and put on, they're riding with me. Look, man, I was there when Sage Northcutt was making his debut, when Derek Lewis was making his debut. I was there before MMA or UFC, well, MMA fans knew who Holly Holm was. I was there. And so when I say there, I was there before they were in the UFC. And so when you tune into like my social media page or whatever I'm doing on my website at MikeTheTruth.com, you get to see, you get to check out these up and coming fighters before they get to the UFC. So once they get there, you're like, oh, I know who Derek Lewis is. I know who Sage Northcutt is. You know, this upcoming season of Dana White's Contender Series, all the guys that I know, like from that are representing, whether it be Texas or Houston or wherever, like you'll know if you follow me, you'll know these guys before. You know, I have, man, my guy actually is going to be my Mike the Truth security in Chicago if he can make it out. You know, he trains over with Curtis Blades too. His name is Juan Adams. They call him the Kraken. You know, I was there at his very first fight, you know, and this is someone you need to know who he is. He's a heavyweight prospect. His wrestling's legit. He's charismatic. And so once he get like, it's like people like this, you see them on my social media and on my platform. And then once they're in the UFC, you're like, oh, I've been following this dude for years because I found him on Mike's page. Or, you know, however you figure it out how to get there. But that's what I'm here to do, man. I'm here to help other people get to the next level. Like I said, this is not even really about me. The money, I'm here for the money. The bag is what I'm here for. And all I'm going to do with that is reinvest into Mike the Truth Entertainment. You know what I'm saying? And so I get to bring people with me. I'm all about giving back to the community. And like I said, this is my community. When I look at Houston MMA, I am Houston MMA. There's nobody doing what I'm doing. When I look at Texas MMA, I am Texas MMA. Nobody's doing what I'm doing, you know? And so we're just going to take the brand nationwide, hopefully worldwide one day. And we'll see what happens. But if people can check me out, MikeTheTruth.com, check out the podcast, at The Truth About Stuff, at MikeTheTruth.com/podcast.
Well, I'll tell you what, you have a few people, if any, have worked as hard to get a fight as you have for this one. And you got the opportunity, you got the spotlight, and I think good things are going to happen, and obviously anything can happen in a fight. But I'm glad you're getting the opportunity, man, because you worked. I'm telling you, you worked for it, and you asked for it, and you were unrelenting. And now, now you get a chance to do your thing on the main stage. And as everyone's heard on this talk, you're very confident in that, and I think it's going to be quite a show, no doubt about it.
There we go. I'm here to entertain, baby.
Awesome stuff, Mike Jackson. Thanks so much, and best of luck.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Well, it has been a while since our guest at this time has been with us, so we wanted to have him back with all types of stuff going on in the world of MMA, and of course, pro graps as well, the pro wrestling, which is really his one true love. I think we all know that. So joining us from MMA Fighting, you know him, I know him. He's the deputy editor there, if I can say that right, of that very good website. And yeah, you know him, Mark Ramondi. Mark, welcome back. And I'll ask you the question that's really been burning up all of media this week. And I want to get your take on this and really what your story is. How many burner accounts do you have on Twitter?
I think it's 17. I don't have the exact total in front of me, but I think it's somewhere in that range.
Yeah, I think I'm at 22 right now.
That's a good number. I think that's, you know, somewhere in the 17 to 25 range, I think is a good solid figure.
What a crazy story that is, huh? I mean, for those that don't know, and I'm surprised you haven't at this point, if you follow any type of pro sports, that essentially, the Philadelphia 76ers executive VP, GM, Brian Colangelo, essentially had a bunch of what they call burner Twitter accounts, fake Twitter accounts, or posing as fans, basically kind of defending his work as GM, criticizing some of his top players and just releasing stuff. And a very, very, very strange story to follow this week. I can't remember anything very similar in MMA. I'd love it if it happened, but very strange story in the world of pro sports.
Allegedly, of course, Josh, right? Allegedly.
Allegedly, that's right.
We don't know for sure. It actually kind of makes me, it kind of has made me wonder if similar things have gone on in MMA, and it makes me kind of think about previous correspondences, the interactions I've had with accounts on Twitter that are just the egg accounts or just like the random person. Like, who are these people really? It's kind of made me think twice about how I interact with people on Twitter.
Yeah, actually, that's really that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that yet. Yeah, I mean, essentially anybody could be anybody, and that's kind of one of the drawbacks of Twitter. I guess one of the positive aspects, if there is one, is that it gives people a voice, but you really don't know who the voice is and who's typing things on the other end. And yeah, I can see you know, a lot of sleuths in all sports maybe trying to put two and two together and trying to figure some things out.
You never know. You never know. I don't know. Maybe we can get a data scientist on this and find out if Dana White is actually tweeting at MMA media members on the regular.
That'd be great if it was. Oh my God, I'm completely blanking. Who is the lead counsel? Is it Goldstein? What is the guy's name? I'm completely forgetting. For the UFC, maybe it could be someone like that. You know, someone, or like Mark Ratner, or someone like that, right?
Right, Lawrence Epstein. Right?
Lawrence Epstein.
Or Hunter Campbell, one of the execs. Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
Mark Ratner. I'm pretty confident in saying that Mark Ratner is not doing that. I don't think Mr. Ratner is opening burner accounts.
I think if anyone was to correlate, it'd be like if someone was to give him like shit about his scarves or something like that. You know, similar to that, say talking about Colangelo's collars. If someone talks about scarves and someone defends him, maybe that's our smoking gun. So as I told you, you're sharing the marquee tonight with Mike Jackson, who is, of course, as you know, fighting next Saturday, a week from Saturday. And opening up pay-per-view against CM Punk, and obviously a very co-worthy marquee person, I would say you are. When you kind of look at this fight, and you know, obviously with two guys as you know, without a ton of experience as they are, and everything, I'm intrigued by this fight for a few reasons. Obviously, because we don't really know what is going on with CM Punk. I don't really necessarily think it's the best thing. The week before he's set to fight, to be sitting in a courtroom. I think that's kind of an angle, this thing. Mike Jackson is obviously pretty confident. He's been obviously doing a lot of work in the 2 years since we've seen him against Mickey Gall. But there's a lot of like controversy about the fact that these two guys are opening up the pay-per-view. There's, you know, Joe Benavidez saying some things about his placement on the card and Alistair Overeemi. I guess with this whole like Punk Jackson placement, I'm pretty sure you kind of understand obviously how the game is. I know that, but like, are you cool that opening up the pay-per-view? Would you rather see it on an FS1, or what do you think about all this?
CM Punk was never going to be on cable or regular television when the UFC signed him. That's not what he's there for. He's there for one reason and one reason alone, and that's to sell pay-per-views. I mean, otherwise, he wouldn't be on the roster. We wouldn't even be having this conversation. So, I mean, to think that he'd be anywhere else but on pay-per-view is just silly. I mean, that's just business. I mean, that's why he's there. He's not there for his fighting prowess. He's there because he makes the UFC money. And I mean, I have no problem with him being on pay-per-view. I think that it just worked out that this turned out to be a very good event, a very deep event. But if CM Punk was on pay-per-view at UFC 224, you know, a few weeks ago, no one would have been complaining, because that wasn't the deepest pay-per-view in the world. I mean, this 225 card is really good. So I think people are upset, I guess, but we have to be realistic about it. CM Punk is a much bigger name and a much bigger draw than I'm confident in saying that he's a bigger draw than anyone on the card.
Wow.
I mean, I guess the only person that you could say is maybe similar in terms of mainstream awareness. It's Holly Holm. I think she's probably second, because everyone knows her from knocking out Ronda Rousey. But as far as like the casual fan, the mainstream fan goes, they've never heard of Robert Whittaker or really Yoel Romero. Colby Covington, Dos Anjos, not really. CM Punk is a bigger name than all those people, if we're being honest.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. That's why I'm surprised that he has not really done any media for it, you know, and really was kind of didn't do a ton of media for his first fight. And it's weird. Like, they have this kind of reluctant star who's trying to make it, or trying to kind of, you know, carve out his wherever he is in this world, and a novice at this stuff, and kind of doesn't want the attention put on him, it feels like. But that's kind of what he's there to do, and he's really not out there doing it. I mean, trial side alone, I bet even if the trial wasn't going on, he wouldn't be doing any media this week, right? I mean, that's kind of my sense.
I feel like he did a lot more media before his first fight, because he at least did the conference call.
In the documentary, right? The one that was on FS1. I completely forgot about
right,
that, too.
Right, exactly. And he did the conference call, whereas today was the UFC 225 conference call, and there was no CM Punk to be found. It was Colby Covington, it was Dos Anjos, it was Whittaker and Romero. No CM Punk. So, yeah, he's not doing much media at all, Bob, ahead of this fight.
What do you expect out of that? Expect next Saturday just kind of be the typical kind of, you know, novice fight, one and one or 0-1 against 0-1, and do you expect fireworks at all?
I have no clue. I'm really intrigued, as you said at the top. I mean, I have no clue what to expect, because we've seen so little of both of those guys in a UFC octagon. And I mean, we know, I guess, a little bit more about Mike Jackson's fighting ability, because he does have some combat sports experience in kickboxing and boxing, and he's a pretty good striker. But as far as MMA goes, I mean, we saw him for, a few seconds, really, against Mickey Gall, and kind of the same thing for CM Punk. So I have no clue what to expect. I think I'm incredibly curious, because I think this is kind of do or die for CM Punk in the UFC, and his future is kind of on the line here. His future in MMA, does he go, and if he loses here, he's probably not going to get another shot in the UFC again, one would imagine. Does he then go to a Bellator? Does he go to a smaller card than that? I mean, I'm sure Bellator would probably be very, very interested in signing him, of course. But yeah, that's really the curiosity here. It's kind of where does this take CM Punk's MMA career? Does he go back to wrestling? Does he, you know, I don't think it'll be with WWE, of course, but that is the big curiosity. It's really, can he get a UFC win? Because that in itself is crazy, right, Josh? I mean, CM Punk has a UFC win. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And then he'll probably get another shot, you know. But then if he loses, he could possibly go somewhere else. And that's a curiosity on top of that, because is the UFC going to let him go? Because, you know, Scott Coker is going to be on the phone with CM Punk a few hours later, talking about a contract. So it's all very interesting.
Yeah, I think it comes down to really whether or not he wants to make if he kind of thinks of himself as a fighter first, and he's a guy that has like he's got a ton of other interests. You know, he does obviously the stuff with Marvel. He does he just like he has so many other things that I think he does that and he has been doing that. He's not your typical, you know, novice to the sport that would have fought probably 2, 3, 4 more times since that initial go. But yeah, I don't think we haven't really heard a lot from him. This fight just kind of was. Everyone kind of expected it, but it was always a question of when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? And I am surprised that we are seeing Punk fight before this year, before McGregor in a lot of ways. You know, it's just it's crazy that we could see CM Punk this year. And we have no idea when we're going to see McGregor next. It's very strange how that works out.
It's the wild and wacky world of mixed martial arts.
It is. Certainly is. Speaking of that, I have not got a chance to see the video yet, but I've heard I saw you post this earlier about Darren Till, this video of him going through his weight cut for this past Sunday's fight against before Stephen Thompson. And obviously everyone kind of knows what the story is there with just the missed weight and then the allowance, which just seemed crazy, and just this kind of this whole bizarre story, and then the fight itself of that unfolded and all that. What did you think when you first saw that video?
You know what? I hate to say this, but I wasn't surprised.
Yeah.
It wasn't shocking, which is not. It didn't feel good to feel that way. If that makes any sense, because we've seen this all before. We've seen these videos. We've seen the sauna suits, and we've seen fighters almost, you know, close to death, where they can't even get up under their own power, where they're just a collapse on the floor. During that video, Darren Till said he couldn't see. He lost his eyesight because he was so dehydrated. And we've seen similar stuff with Chris Cyborg in videos that she's had put out, and Paige VanZant and Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And it's the same thing every time. And I'm still waiting for someone to actually come in and say, all right, this needs to change. This is ridiculous. And it hasn't happened yet. And it's very, Josh, I've written a lot about weight cutting and It's frustrating because it's still happening, you know, and not enough steps are being taken to stop it from happening. It's crazy to me that the act of getting ready for the fight, making the fight, is more dangerous than the fight itself. It does not make any sense to me. It's ridiculous. It's silly. It's the dumbest thing in sports, in my opinion, and it continues. And we see these videos, and people say, oh, it's shocking. It's not shocking. This is a regular occurrence. That happened probably 2 or 3 more times on that card. We just didn't see the video, and it wasn't the main event fighter. It's just ridiculous, and there's no end in sight.
Yeah, I think I'm at the point. I've been at the point for a while with a lot of these things that that we've complained about and talked about, and stuff like, you know, fighter unions and weight cutting and all this stuff. That it's just there's until like a tragedy happens, unfortunately, or something. Really, I think some of these things are just, they're never going to change. And it's just the mentality of the guys and the women and the sport itself. And that for whatever reason, it's just, there's just nothing there. It's ever going to change. So I think we can bring it up. But I think to your point, like, it's hard to be shocked by this stuff anymore, you know, and we've seen this and you make a great point. For the video that we do see of the main eventer, there is this stuff happening, not only this card, but, you know, other cards throughout the country. Bellator shows, all these UFC, I mean, even the UFC shows were seemingly there.
Amateur fights. I mean, yeah. Man, it doesn't end.
Yeah. I'm questioning, even in like, if somebody was to unfortunately like die, you know, in the UFC at a major event, even a minor UFC event, I don't think the sport would change at all. I think they may talk about regulations, but I just think they would find some way to be like, well, this is a random occurrence or something happened and I don't know. I just don't have the faith that the sport would correct itself.
Well, there's always, whenever something like this happens, it always seems like someone's making an excuse. Well, there was some personal issue, and I'm not discussing these things, and I'm not saying they're not real, but it's like the weight cuts are so large, and everything needs to be so perfect that if one little thing goes wrong, if someone gets sick, if there's a personal issue during fight week. Any little thing goes wrong, the weight cut itself could go horribly, and it could be someone missing weight. It could be someone getting rushed to the hospital. I mean, we've seen it happen all too many times that if just one – it's such a sensitive process with such a small margin for error that one little thing happens, and it could just derail the whole process and be very, very, very dangerous. I mean, we've seen – kidney failure. I mean, one of the people on the car coming up at UFC Utica tomorrow, Sadara Eubanks, had kidney failure before she was going to be fighting for the flyweight title back in December. Couldn't make the fight because she couldn't even get on the scale because she was too dehydrated. She was in the hospital. I mean, it's happened so many times. I don't know what. I mean, I don't even want to talk about what would happen if someone were to you know, God forbid, die. That's a frightening proposition. But we've already gotten pretty close to that.
Yeah.
And people have died, and it isn't the UFC, but people have died in smaller organizations. There was a case earlier this year in Brazil, Shudo, the promotion in Rio. There was already a death before in Shudo a few years ago. And then earlier this year, there was a guy who got hospitalized trying to make weight, a younger fighter, and he is still he was just taken out of ICU recently. This was a few months ago. He's in very, very bad shape. He may never recover. My colleague Guillermo Cruz is really the only person who has written about this terrible story, and it doesn't get enough attention. You know, these are things that could happen at any time on any UFC card. But they've happened before, and we're just waiting for tragedy to strike. It seems like, and nothing has gotten done. And California is trying to do stuff, but you really need the UFC to make a concerted effort to do something, or it's not going to happen the way it should happen because it's too disjointed in the way that these commissions work, and every state has its own regulatory body, and there's no consistency. We can't even get the rules to be the same in every state in the cage. We can't expect them to have the same kind of rules as far as weight cutting goes.
I know. Yeah, I was just thinking,
it's crazy.
I can't picture that this is a sport that the rule set is different from state to state. I can't imagine any other sport where it's like this. Obviously, in like baseball, there's the the DH and the pitcher hits in the NL. But it's still baseball, and there's still, you know, a home run is a home run, and strikeout. Like, it's just I cannot get over this thing about how every state has not adopted the same set of rules. Try explaining this stuff to someone that's not a fan of the sport. They'd be just like, what? This doesn't make any sense.
All of these things are kind of adding up to, I think, the disillusionment of some fans, some of the casual fans. I really believe that. I think that MMA is probably at its lowest point in a while. And I think a lot of these things we're talking about, Josh, is the reasons why. Especially when you advertise a fight, you promote a fight, they make it through fight week, they're a day out of the fight, all of a sudden the main event person's in the hospital, can't make weight. The fight is off. That has happened so many times in the last 2 years. I mean, it's crazy. And so there's no real trust in the UFC's product because you can't really get excited for a fight until like maybe an hour before the card starts because you don't know. I mean, last year Amanda Nunes couldn't make she made weight, and the next day, the day of the fight, she had to pull out because she was too sick. I mean, so there's no real. The trust, the consumer trust, has completely evaporated, I think, from the UFC. And until they do something about this weight stuff, I mean, it's gonna continue that way. If you can't really trust that a person's gonna make the fight, how can you really get invested in the product?
Well, speaking of being invested in the product, can I interest you in a fight night card from Utica coming up on Friday?
Sure. I'll be watching it as always.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the main event should be fun. Promise to be fun. A good rivalry here going. It's been building up for months between Jimmy Rivera and Marlon Moraes at bantamweight, so that should be kind of give us some indications of who could be next in line for a title shot. I mean, there's some interesting names up and down the card and some kind of like weird fights, I mean, is there anything else kind of captured your interest on the show?
I mean, there's a few interesting fights. I think Jake Ellenberger versus Ben Saunders is kind of an interesting fight because it's kind of a, well, where are these guys? First of all, that's a fight that seems like it should have happened like 3 times before, but it hasn't happened yet. And it's one of those fights where you kind of find out where those guys are at this point in their career. Obviously, they have a name. I think Gregor Gillespie is a guy that people need to be looking at. I think he's a really good prospect. I'm interested in the women's fight, the aforementioned Sajara Eubanks against Lauren Murphy. Very intriguing fight because they had that rivalry, that beef on the Ultimate Fighter last year, and Murphy was cutting weight to try to take Eubanks' place. So that's kind of an interesting fight. I mean, there's a few interesting fights on the card. I like the Julio Arce versus David Tamer fight. So I mean, it has intrigue. If you're a hardcore fan of MMA, there's definitely some stuff for you there. As far as the casual fans go, it's probably one that you're going to skip. Although, again, like you said, that main event I think is fantastic. I think I think Moraes against Rivera is a sensational fight at 135 pounds.
Yep, exactly. And hopefully that doesn't go on at like 12:30 at night, you know?
I mean, if I didn't live on the West Coast, I would be struggling, man. It's, I don't know how you guys on the East Coast do these UFC, especially the fight night cards on FS1. They're rough.
Usually my procedure is I will stay up as long as I can, but then I will not check any Twitter or anything like that until like the next, I'll try to watch as much as I can then the next morning and just kind of catch up and then catch up on Twitter after that. It's hard. It's really hard, you know, especially, and it's unfortunate that we hear that, you know, ESPN is not going, it looks like they're going to try to keep the same format, and hopefully it sounds like they're going to do the same pacing. And, you know, it's just hard with these very, you know, these cars are 12, you know, 11, 12 deep, and the way they start so late, it's just, I don't know, no other sport does this. It's another one of kind of those little nuances that makes MMA the weird sport that it is that your main events go on so late, and so many people don't have an opportunity just to kind of stop by and be like, oh, we're going to check this out, especially in the East Coast where, you know, the majority of the country lives.
Yeah, I don't think the current TV product is very conducive to bringing in new fans, to be honest. I don't know what – I mean, I think that sometimes us in the MMA media kind of – we have to kind of watch the whole cards for the most part live, whereas I think that's something that the common fan now doesn't do as much. I think they kind of cherry-pick what they want to watch and which cards and which fights on those cards. They don't watch the whole seven-hour extravaganza every Saturday. So, I mean, I think – and that's fine. But it's also, like I said, not conducive to bringing in a new fan base. And if you're going to be on ESPN Plus and you're putting main events on at, man, you know, midnight on a Saturday night, and it's on a streaming service, it's really going to be hard to get, you know, to grab some of these you know, new fans' attention. Like, who's going to be watching that stuff? It's really going to be only the people that are already hardcore fans. You're not going to get a new audience out of that.
Yeah, I think that's going to give us a good indication of where the fan base is at when everything goes to ESPN Plus, or the majority, a lot of the fight nights go to ESPN Plus in January, because obviously people are going to have subscribed to the service. I'm sure, you know, a lot of people or some of the more tech savvy or nefarious will try to get streams just to save the $5 a month and can avoid that. But I think, you know, $5 isn't a lot of money, and I think you're going to get. I'm fascinated to see how many people subscribe based on the UFC going over there. I think they're fascinated by it. I mean, I can't see, you know, I can't see like a million people. I can't see like a WWE network or something like that. But, you know, I wonder what they're hoping for. I'm sure they're hoping for like 500,000 or something like that. But I don't know if that's realistic right off the bat.
I honestly have no idea. The one thing that I do think is good about the ESPN deal from the UFC's perspective is just, I mean, for one, just the cachet of being on ESPN. Even though they'll only actually be on the mothership or one of the other networks, the actual cable networks, 10 times a year, just having that presence, I think, on ESPN television. They're going to have a studio show. They're going to have, I'm sure they'll be getting promotion on SportsCenter, because ESPN, as you know, when they have the broadcast rights to a sport, they do pump it up much more than if they don't have those broadcast rights. So I think that will be a big deal, because FS1, I mean, let's be honest, when that launched, it was a brand new channel. It had, you know, it had no built-in base as far as fans go, and the UFC was on that from day one, so they had to kind of build from there. So it was kind of like starting from scratch. Yes, everyone knew Fox Sports, but it was literally a brand new channel, and they never did the ratings, of course, that they did on Spike TV, which is the channel that everyone kind of, you know, knew as the MMA channel on cable. So I think that just having that presence on ESPN will help them. But, yes, it is. It is a big question. How many fans will actually go over to ESPN Plus just for the UFC? And can they grow their fan base from there? And maybe they don't care as much because they're making so much darn money out of this deal. So that's. I mean, credit to them. You know, they definitely made a windfall. You know, they made over $1 billion. Over the course of 5 years. So that's a good thing. You know, that's definitely a good thing. But where will the sport be in 5 years when that deal is up? That I don't know.
So speaking of ESPN, I don't know if you heard your colleague Ariel Helwani is going over there. Is that breaking news to you?
Oh, what, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, congrats, Ariel. I had no idea. Good for him.
I don't want to be that guy and be like, oh, what are the plans for this and what are the plans for that? Because I know people are asking, and things just kind of happen behind the scenes and all that stuff for anyone that leaves an organization and try to fill in and figure things out and kind of, go. And but I'm curious, I saw your tweet after the news and obviously you were congratulating him, but then there was one afterwards. You basically kind of reaffirmed what I think people kind of understand or should know is that you guys have a deep bench. It's not like the site's going to go down. It's not like there's going to be any shortage of stories or interviews or just, how you produce it and put it out there. That's, that'll change, but that's just, that's life in media. So, I think people kind of, maybe slept on that a little bit. You guys have a really deep bench. You mentioned Guillerme Cruz, who's down in Brazil. A lot of organizations don't have people down there. They're actually covering that in one of the, I'd say hotbeds of MMA, but a very important cradle of MMA still. And I think, I don't really have a question here, but more kind of a statement. Like, I thought it was good. You kind of reaffirmed that, we're figuring some stuff out, but we're still here, guys.
100%. And what I'm internally, I've been really happy about how Vox Media and SB Nation have supported us over the last, months since we've known that Ariel is leaving. And that's been very encouraging from our perspective at MMA Fighting that they, that they still want MMA Fighting to maintain its spot as the number one site in MMA. And I think we are, and I think we'll continue to be. And to your point, Guillerme Cruz is for my money, the best reporter in Brazil. I mean, he's breaking a ton of news from down there, and he's got everyone in Brazil on speed dial in the MMA scene down there. So he's doing a great job. We have PT Carroll, who's doing our UK coverage. What he produced last weekend, with Bellator 200 and UFC Liverpool, the guy was running all over the place, all over England, and he did a tremendous job. And he's been doing a great job covering the Irish scene and the UK scene. And you'll be seeing more of probably Jed Michu, who's a guy that fans seem to like a lot on camera. So hopefully we'll get him more spots on camera and analyzing some more. So I mean, we still have Sean Alshadi, we still have Chuck Mindenhall, who are the two best writers. I mean, two of the best writers in sports, not even in MMA. They're two of the best writers in sports. We still have Mike Chiappetta. We still have Luke Thomas. I mean, I mean, losing Ariel Helwani, he's the best. I mean, he's the best in the biz. There's no doubt about it, but it isn't like it isn't like LeBron leaving the Cavs. There is a very deep roster in MMA Fighting, and I think we're going to be all right.
Yeah. And yourself, you can give yourself a big pat on the back, Mark. Come on.
I'm all right. Those other guys are way more talented than me.
Main event time, Mark. This is where a chance to show you real stuff. What's got your interest in the world? The true sport, the true king of kings, professional wrestling.
Oh, so many things. I'm very, very upset that the New Japan show at the Cow Palace, the G1 special, is going to be the same day as UFC 226.
Yes.
Because obviously I will be in Las Vegas for International Fight Week, and I can't make it up to San Francisco. That's a bummer. I would have definitely gone had that not intersected. But I'm excited about Dominion coming up here in about a week, right? I mean, Dominion is going to be a week from I guess tomorrow night for us in the States, and I'm going to be in Chicago for UFC 225, and I'm not quite sure how I'm gonna watch that yet, but real, real excited for that stuff. I mean, I'm a PWG loyalist these days, and I go to pretty much every PWG here out in LA. And there's a stacked card coming July 13th, so I'm sure I'll be at that. WWE's all right. I still watch WWE. I'm excited about the signing of Io Shirai from Stardom. That's going to be great. And I'm a big fan of her. And yeah, I mean everything is. I love the talent roster. I don't always love the directions that they're going in, but I do love the roster they have as far as talent goes.
Yeah, I was talking to John Pollock about all this last week about the TV deals and all this, and it's it's interesting. They have the most stacked roster at any point in their history, from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. When you go from WWE all the way down to NXT, which is just an embarrassment of riches, and in fact, only on 1 hour a week is still incredible at this point. But you know, it's like. I was talking about the UFC thing as well, is that, you know, we complain about cards or just frustrated with length of cards and when they start, and WWE, like, this guy's booked this way, this guy's booked this way. In the end, both the organizations won, you know? They kind of shut the internet fans out and the people that complain so much and are like, people seem to like what we're doing enough where, you know, we're getting paid way more money than we were in the deals before. And it's like, it's disheartening in a way because you hope your voice matters, but in the end, it feels like, it's going to take something a lot more to kind of get the direction to change, but it's as frustrating as times as both are. It's really, we don't have any. Let's say we don't have alternatives, but they just, you know, they're going to do what they do and they're going to make their money, and we just have to kind of accept it.
Pretty much, I mean that's pretty much a good way to sum it up. I really do. I love almost everything about NXT at this point. I think NXT is kind of I think it's genius because they've almost created an internal, like, cooler, hipper brand that is, you know, has kind of more exciting young talent and is kind of, booked better, at least in my opinion. My guy Ricochet, who I was lucky enough to see in Reseda a few times, and PWG is just doing ridiculous things in NXT now, and I think he's a star. So, I mean, look, they're man, the amount of money they got on their TV deal, and they really one-upped the UFC in a big way. I didn't think it was going to be that big of a gap. I mean, they really hit the jackpot with SmackDown going to Fox, and I mean, really Fox choosing SmackDown over really the entire UFC broadcast deal. It's crazy. And then of course Raw staying on USA for another ridiculous amount of money. I mean, look, I don't dislike WWE. I think that the expectations are very high on them, and I do like a good amount of what they do. But and I support the talent. I mean, the talent, like you said, is just off the charts.
They have crazy.
So much talent. It's just and maybe that's hard in itself. You know, trying to find the room and the right stories and the time. I mean, even though there is quite a lot of TV time, 3 hour Raws, it's tough. It's tough. I'll continue to be watching certainly as it moves over next year.
We'll get you out of here on this. Yeah, I know you were at WrestleMania this year, and the in ring debut of Ronda Rousey, and we're getting her first title shot opportunity coming up, and I think she's been booked very strangely. I think this past few months has been, since WrestleMania, it's been very weird to me. I think she's. She's kind of like, they're trying to treat her as one of the girls in a sense, just one of the everyday roster. And to me, like, I'm surprised they're not keeping her kind of on the Brock pedestal, mm-hmm. so to speak. And I think a lot of people are surprised by that. The fact that there hasn't been a real big chase to get the title shot. And we really haven't seen her in the ring since then. And just this, how this title match was made at a TV upfront of all things. I think that is very strange. I don't know. This is just—it's been really strange how they've booked her. I don't know if you agree with that. If you think things are great with her.
Yeah, it's certainly not how I expected. I too also thought that they would book her more as a special attraction, and she's been on television almost every week. And yeah. I think the reason for that is actually more internal than external. I think that they want to underscore to their own talent that she's not being treated any differently, that she's not a part-timer, that she's a full-timer. I think that's probably something that either she wanted to do or WWE wanted to do, or maybe both of them wanted to do, and that's what they've gone with. And it's led to some awkward angles where, you know, you're not you don't want to overexpose her. I don't feel like she is overexposed, but you run that risk of her not seeming special. You don't want her to be just another one of the women on the roster. She's Ronda Rousey. I mean, she's one of the most famous female athletes in the world, so she should be differentiated in some way. I don't necessarily think the booking of her has been bad. I think if they're going to commit to actually having her on almost every week, I think they've done an okay job at that, and she's doing all right. You know, she's in ring. You know, that match at WrestleMania was
awesome,
fantastic. I mean, yeah. that was an incredible debut. You know, her promos are not amazing, but I think she's fine. I think she's been fine, honestly. I don't think she's not been bad. I would say she's probably been average, and for someone who's just coming into this, I think she's, considering that, I think she's done a good job. That is the big question, though. You know, what are they going to do with her? Is she going to get the title against Nia Jax? How do they build her from here? Because it's been that seems very rushed. That whole thing seems very rushed to me. Like, why is she getting this now? I know they could have built to that a little bit longer, you know, a little bit better. But maybe they just figure they just want to put the belt on her and just have people chase her. I don't know. I don't really know what the line of thinking is there. I also saw on TMZ she said like 2 weeks ago that she wants to have a kid soon.
Yeah.
So maybe there's a rush to get her, you know, to put her in big spots now, because maybe the window, at least for now, is actually smaller than we thought it would be if she really wants to have a baby with Travis Brown. I don't know if that's this year or next year, but maybe they want to get something done before that. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I think overall I would probably give them like a C+ or like a B-. I don't think it's been bad. If they've been committed to actually putting her on TV, it could have been worse. It could have been worse, some of the things they've done.
Yeah, I think that for those people that do not have kids and have not kind of experienced it from your wife or someone close to you, like, it's not just a case of like 9 months and then you're kind of right back to it. My wife is super active in physical fitness and all this stuff. I mean, it took her between having our daughter, being pregnant, and then right afterwards, and it's a 2-year process at least. And it just, until you kind of get to the point of where you want to be. And then there's this other thing that people may kind of not understand. There's an emotional attachment you have to this baby, and you don't want to leave this baby. And I mean, she is, I just can't picture wanting to go on the road. And I don't know. I mean, maybe that her and Travis have talked about this and how they figure this out, but I think that's going to be a big challenge. And if she, you know, if she, she's a human being, if she decides that she wants to be a mom and just kind of, you know, have this 1 year, say 1 year run or something, WWE, and just do the family thing, and she doesn't come back, or it's really sparse and she waits a couple of years, I am interested to see how the TV partners like that. Are they kind of banking on the fact that she'd be on more often? And, you know, I'm fascinated to see how that kind of plays out. It's, you know, when human beings get involved and life gets involved, it causes you to have to make some changes pretty quick and deal with some consequences too.
Yeah, I think I could see her doing that 1 year run, having a big match at WrestleMania, maybe even headlining WrestleMania next year.
Yeah.
And then maybe going away for a little while, maybe having a baby. That would not shock me at all.
Crazy stuff. Mark, before we let you go, give you the chance to channel your inner Mean Gene Okerlund and plug away where people can find you on social media and what they should be checking up with the website.
Of course, MMAfighting.com is the website. I mean, a ton of coverage this weekend from not just UFC Utica, but we will have boots on the ground in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Esther Lynn and Casey Lydon will be providing some photo and video goodness from Bare Knuckle FC,
one of the first
legally sanctioned
yes.
bare knuckle boxing cards in the United States since the 1800s. I'm super excited to see the art that Casey and Esther, who are the best. I didn't even mention them when we were talking about MMAfighting.com. I mean, their art that they produce, the videos and the photos are incredible. I mean, it's one of the best parts of our site, if not the best part of our site. And they're going to be shooting bare knuckle boxing on Saturday night. I'm super excited to see what they produce from there. And just for me, I'm Mark MARC_Raymondi @ Twitter if you want to hit me up there. I will not give out any of my burner accounts, though, unfortunately. Sorry.
Well, we'll have to get the investigators on that to figure out what where they are. I will say that you bring up bare knuckle boxing at that event in Wyoming. I am surprised that our esteemed MMAJA president, Ben Folks, is not traveling to compete in that show. Maybe he is. Maybe he's a surprise entrant.
He is traveling to the show, but not to compete. I believe he's covering it.
Mm. Maybe they could ask him to come out from the crowd. You know, I think he might be down for that.
Look, it's bare knuckle boxing in Cheyenne, Wyoming. I think anything goes at this point. Pretty much anything could happen, and I'm banking on that.
What a time to be alive. Mark Raimondi, thanks so much for dropping by.
Thanks, Josh.
All right. Big thanks to both Mike Jackson and Mark Raimondi. You can follow their work, obviously, on Twitter. And, you know, they gave you all the promos and the plugs and all that stuff. And, I think that 225 card is going to be a banger. I'm really excited for that. Again, we knock on wood, say a prayer, holy rosaries, whatever you do for good luck. Let's hope that there's no injuries happen and we get that card from top to bottom. And I wanted to, something I kind of alluded to, talked a little bit about with Mark, is, you know, people complaining about their placement in the card and, you know, Alistair Overeem showing some frustrations that his fight with Curtis Blaydes is on, or Dave Simon calls him Curtis Blaydes, and I have no idea why he does that. I think because there's a Y in there, but it's Curtis Blaydes. And also, Joe Benavidez, I saw today, he was complaining because he's on the Fight Pass portion of the show, as is Rashad Evans, but I haven't heard any complaining from him yet. That's what happens when you have a stacked show and you also have, guys that are veterans that haven't fought for a while, in the case of Benavidez, and you also have, Rashad Evans kind of not having a great run. I mean, I wouldn't expect him to complain. He fought against Sam Alvey in Mexico, and the fight was like six from the top in a UFC, an FS1 show, you know, so I don't expect him to kind of say much. So, you know, it really just depends on where guys are at in their careers. And actually, let me kind of just look at the card while I have your interest level here. Let's see. Yeah, you know, the only, I don't know. I mean, you kind of look over this. It really depends on what your perception of perception of pay-per-view quality is, and whether or not you think, and this would seem to be kind of a duh statement, but do you think that the best five fights should be on pay-per-view? Now, you kind of think, of course they are. If you're paying for it, you want the best potentially five fights. The biggest stars may not be the best fights, but you guys kind of get what I mean. The best attractions, I guess. And I would say for the most part, you know, if you're thinking from the hardcore, here's the thing. And I think we all know, the hardcores like us that are listening to this, we're going to watch the show anyway. It's not like we're going to pick and choose and say, okay, we're not going to watch the pay-per-view, but we're going to watch just FS1. These are the people that, you know, they're trying to convert. So UFC is. So they are hoping that by this, the FS1 show, the FS1 portion, which is only four fights, so it's the 2-hour brand. They're hoping it's going to be engaging enough where someone's like, I'm going to buy the rest. So they got to put good fights on there. The UFC Fight Pass, I mean, this is kind of, their fights on here, I could argue, should be on FS1 instead. I mean, there's a, that Claudia Gadelha fight. Well, no, you know, that could be, yeah, this is actually a really, really good card. I mean, the fact that Clay Guida and Charles Oliveira is second from the bottom is incredible. Jose Benavidez. Joseph, we have a painter, guy painting our house right now. It's Jose, so I'm all messed up. Joseph Benavidez versus Sergio Pettis. I mean, that's on the Fight Pass prelims. Rashad Evans versus Anthony Smith. I think that's going to be pretty fun. So, I mean, that Fight Pass portion is stacked, and I hate using the word stacked, but you guys kind of like, I mean, that's really good. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, you could argue that maybe Benavidez Pettis should be up above like Arlovski, Tai Tuivasa. Obviously, the Punk Jackson thing. I mean, it's the show business aspect versus the sporting aspect. And I think obviously the two title fights and Holly Holm, Megan Anderson, those should be where they are. That is a really awesome card from top to bottom. As I look at this, you have Ricardo Lamas versus Mirsad Bektic. Gadelha versus Spars. We'll talk more about this show in depth next week, and then Overeem versus Blaydes. So that should be, yeah, I mean, injury free. That is that's a banger of a card. And that's kind of what the UFC is doing these days. So we'll talk more about that next week. Again, UFC Utica coming up. We didn't really get too much in depth with that. Crossroads fights, which longtime listeners of the show will know that I love. Ellenberger Saunders, definitely. John Vellante, Sam Alvey, I would say that's a Crossroads fights as well. Really weird fight at 205, right? John Vellante and Sam Alvey. That fight could be horrible, or it could end in a quick knockout. So we'll hope for the latter. And then, yeah, Gillespie and Vince Bichelle. That's a hardcore fan's delight. I think that is a potential there. Gillespie just kind of doing his thing at lightweight, and that's good. You know, he's just kind of plodding along, getting some fun wins, and not really on the radar of the bigger MMA landscape, so to speak. You know, he's kind of like, people like us know who he is, and he's kind of making this slow march, but they're not trying to push him too hard, which I think is good and smart. Obviously, there's enough fights for him to, I mean, the rest of 2018, he get three more fights and just kind of fight the middle of the pack and definitely advance his career that way. And obviously that main event, Jimmy Rivera and Marlon Moraes, this is kind of one of the shames of having so many shows is that fight. I mean, you kind of like put some of these together, like, say that had been the co-main event, and I know that people want to see some of these fights stretch over five rounds, but just say that was the co-main of UFC Liverpool. Say they did a show where it was Thompson, Till, and Rivera Moraes as a co-main. I mean, that would have been awesome. I think you kind of spread things out, as Mark and I were talking about. You spread things out a bit, and people do the pick-and-choose thing. And, you know, it's hard to kind of build an audience from that. And I think I'm really fascinated to see with this ESPN Plus deal how many people actually do decide to come over and buy. I think it's going to tell us a lot. I think what it could do is shave off some people that have just been kind of watching stuff on free TV and maybe just kind of like, I'm good. You know, I'll watch it maybe if I see it, maybe buy an occasional pay-per-view of McGregor fights. But, you know, overall, I'm good. So we're going to know a lot about where MMA is in about, 6 months, 7 months when it comes to whether or not they can convert some people over. I think they're going to be fine, and I guarantee you'll be hearing a lot of death knells when it comes time to in January if the subscriber number isn't high or whatever. That first card is going to be good. I would virtually guarantee that. So kind of keep that in mind as the fourth quarter calendar comes together, is that I think they're going to sacrifice a lot, and especially these Fox shows coming up the last quarter of the year, because they're going to really want to build up that January show. And I wonder how that will affect the year-end show, the big year-end pay-per-view they do. But that's months and months and months in ahead. But just kind of something to file away as you're thinking about stuff throughout the second half of the year as the calendar comes together. Let's see. Other housekeeping notes, not a ton. I was on Antonio Thomas's podcast this week, Left Your Wallet. So if you like me on this show, you can check that episode out. We talk a lot about baseball. So we don't talk really about MMA at all. We talk about baseball, fantasy baseball, my favorite baseball player of all time, Red Sox memories, a little bit of Celtics, Cavs bitching, and then the EWA, which was a professional wrestling organization, an indie in Portland, Maine, that I used to be a ring announcer for back in 2000, 2001. And it was fun because I could completely blank that Antonio wrestled there. And the minute he said, I'm just like, oh my God, that's right. I completely remember him. And it was just a fun walk down memory lane, and some of the names and just some of the things you remember. It was, tell you what, it was that was a really, really fun time. I was out of college. I was working for the Portland Pirates at the time, which is a minor league hockey team in Portland, Maine, and wasn't making a ton of money and just wanted to do some other stuff and kind of had some fun and decided to start doing ring announcing for a pro wrestling organization, and it was surreal. It was fun to kind of see behind the curtain, you know, but it was a lot of fun. It really was. And it was, I was kind of thinking like, and I have to tell this story. I alluded to on the Antonio show, but at some point I want to do a bigger podcast on how I almost I almost started an indie group, me and two other guys named Josh. We almost started an indie group to the point that we had a show scheduled and a major snowstorm happened and the show got canceled and actually helped us probably from losing our shirts, in a lot of ways and not a ton of money, but enough. So that story I do want to tell someday. It's kind of in the back burner, but it was a wild ride to get to this group that we started, and I want to tell that story someday. So just kind of, you know, file that one away as well. But yeah, we talked a little about the EWA with Antonio, and that was a lot of fun. So thanks to him for having me on his show. Some writers have been changing kind of some website news. Things are stable, which is good. It's always good to see and hear. Writers. Yeah. So, a lot of changes with writers. It was just a no real choice of ours. It was just, people decided to move on. So Jeff Hamlin, after a long run on Raw, had decided to fold it up and call it a day. He mentioned All Japan. I think we are going in that direction. We had to kind of discuss that to see how we're going to cover that and so on. But it looks like if we do that, he'll be taking the reins on that. But luckily, Steve Kahn, who, if you read our Raw reports or SmackDown reports regular, he's going to move over to that slot, which is great. Aria Whitner decided to move on from NXT. And then we have, Chris Akin taking over that spot. We have Dave Bath, who's going to move from TNA to SmackDown, and Josh Molina coming back in the mix to do TNA. And that means we have an opening on Lucha Underground, which we're going to fill. So there's a lot of kind of shifting behind the scenes, but it's been, it's been good. It's been good. We're kind of figuring some stuff out, and, you know, people get burned out on some of these shows. I think Raw probably damn near killed Jeff Hamlin a couple times, but, we thank him for his service and also Aria as well. And, look forward to better things ahead and, bigger, better things for everyone ahead. And that's about it. So, again, big thanks to Barker and Mondi. Thanks to Mike Jackson. Good luck to him coming up a week from Saturday in Chicago. We will be watching and very interested to see how that turns out. And obviously, how Punk does with this lawsuit. And I can't imagine for the biggest fight of his career at this point. Obviously, the last one was big, but this one, as we talked about with Mark, this tells a lot about as far as where we go from here, whether it gets cut and that whole thing after that. And Bellator would love to snap him up, I'm sure, but it's a question of whether or not Phil Brooks wants to be a professional fighter or not. And I have my doubts because he has basically been on the shelf for 2 years. Has he been training this whole time? I mean, I don't know. We've talked before about the benefit of guys just kind of going away and not knowing what they're doing. And with Punk, I get that sense in a way, but it's kind of, I don't know if I get the sense that he's been trained to be a pro fighter. We're going to get questions answered coming up a week from Saturday. And I am getting more excited by that, about that card by the day. So anyway, but yeah, sitting in a courtroom all day, this trial, I mean, what if this runs into next week? I don't know. It's fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. Again, what a time to be alive. So, again, big thanks to Mike Jackson. Thanks to Mark Raimondi. Thanks to all you guys for listening. We're off and running on the second set episodes. 100 are down in the books. 101 has started. We're off and running. So thanks for stopping by. This is Josh Nason's Punch Out. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.